Yeah, when you are a known owner, buyer, operator, you have closed one before, you will be brought opportunities, or you'll be given the opportunity to compete for properties that are either on market or off market, much more likely to get that attention than if you are just somebody calling up saying, hey, I want to buy my first place. When you can say, hey, I've already done this before. I just got to do it again. Obviously, I've done it before. So now, you know, you can trust me that I can do it again. It's, you know, the probability of closing is a huge factor in the, you know, the determination of whether or not not only a broker, but a seller takes a buyer seriously. It's, what else does this guy own?
Welcome to the Prosperity Through Multifamily Real Estate Investing podcast, brought to you by Blue Oak Capital. If you are looking to take your real estate investing to the next level and learn how you can achieve your financial success by investing in multifamily real estate, then this show is for you. Our mission is to help you improve your education and learn proven strategies from industry leaders to help you master multifamily investing. Now here's your hosts, Cody Laughlin, John Beatty, and Brian Alfaro.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Prosperity Through Multifamily Real Estate Investing podcast. I'm your host, Real Estate Cody, and joining me in the hot seat today is Mr. Brian Alfaro. Brian, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Cody. Trying to stay dry. It's been raining for, what, 2 weeks straight, 3 weeks straight now here in Houston, but doing the best we can.
I feel like you need a boat to get anywhere around here right now. It's just like a never-ending monsoon. It's crazy. So,
yeah.
But brings up a good point. Hurricane season around the corner for those who are in the Texas or in the coastal areas. Make sure you have your insurance policy shored up. Make sure you have your homes ready to go because it's going to be another long season. But anyway, who are we talking to today, man?
We've got a close personal friend in the hot seat today, Mr. Lee Ford. So Lee got his start in real estate in 2012, building a property management department of a residential brokerage from 20 doors to 220 doors in 4 years. After being inspired by his clients' successes, he decided to start investing in 2016. Relocating to St. Louis in order to pursue investing in 2017, Lee began with a duplex and continued to purchase smaller properties until he found the power of partnerships. By partnering with an ex-NFL player from California, and with their combined efforts, we were able to close a 38-unit apartment complex, JV, in Lee's backyard of St. Louis, Missouri, in October of 2019. After seeing the results of the 38-unit and garnering experience in larger multifamily properties, Lee continued to build momentum in investing and deal-making while building a rockstar team to pursue even larger deals through the power of syndication. The team closed its first 506B syndication of a 76-unit apartment complex in St. Louis in October of 2020, which is, you know, right at the peak of COVID. So congratulations on that. Actively building a sizable portfolio and larger multifamily properties throughout the greater St. Louis MSA and expanding to additional markets throughout the Midwest and Southeast. And he's focusing on value-add opportunities. It's his main focus of the continental growth of his investing journey through expansion with the development of Green Forest Capital, real estate investing with a conscience. The Green Forest Capital's mission is to provide safe, clean, and modern affordable housing to thousands of workforce families throughout the Midwest and Southeast, providing an above-average return on investment to his investing partners while supporting and promoting the reforestation of our national parks affected by forest fires by donating 1% of all distributed funds to One Tree Planted, which is, that's awesome. Lee has almost a decade of experience as a property manager, realtor, commercial leasing agent, asset manager, and commercial property broker. A true believer and practitioner of the words of Zig Ziglar, you can have everything in life you want if you would just help other people get what they want, which I know we definitely live by. So Lee, welcome to the show.
Hey, Brian, Cody, thank you so much. I can't tell you how appreciative I am to be a guest on your show and be able to provide some value to your audience.
Well, we are excited to have you, man. I know we were joking around before the show. This is our third attempt at getting this episode recorded. So really excited. I know there's a lot of great content and conversation coming up and, you know, pleasure to call you a friend here now for some time. So really excited to be here. Lee, it's kind of interesting listening to your bio, man. Is there anything that you haven't done in real estate? Or
that is a very long bio. And I actually just made a note, like, we need to shorten that bio. I have done almost everything that I can imagine at this point. I've seen, and what I haven't done, I've seen others do. And it just gives me a world of, you know, ability to see all the opportunities out in the marketplace and be able to help help others with, you know, that's my goal, is to help anyone and everyone be able to achieve their goals and provide, you know, a wonderful place for someone to live as well at the same time.
Well, I think that's a great point, Cody. There's a job for everybody in real estate. I would argue, right? Whether you're like an outgoing person who loves talking to people, or you're a more analytical person, you know, whether you're in single family, triple net, retail, single use, like there's kind of a seat for everybody, which is, you know, just goes to show, just because if maybe you try something and maybe you don't have success early on, you can maybe dip your toes in different things when you're getting started to kind of see where you best fit.
Yeah, I agree. Especially when people are getting introduced to real estate and they really don't know, hey, what is that skill set? What is that niche that really gets them fired up in real estate? You know, you got to get yourself out there and you got to take on different roles. And this is, you know, it's a great way to kind of find out what your passion in real estate is, right? Go work for other companies or go take on this particular role and responsibility and just try it until you find that one thing that gets you excited, you know? And so really cool, diverse background, man. Love your upbringing, so to speak. But tell us a bit more, man. Tell us how you ended up, you know, getting where you are today.
Yeah, I got my real estate agent license because I lived in an area of Florida, Destin, where the only way you could make six figures is either be a doctor, a lawyer, or be a real estate agent. And I was going to go sell $1 million houses, right? Go get those $1 million listings and make, you know, money and drive a, you know, a brand new Mercedes that's leased. And, you know, so I sat open houses for 6 months waiting for someone to walk in and say, I'll take it. And needless to say, that just didn't happen. This was in, you know, 2011, 2012, and the market wasn't quite what it is today. So I wasn't having as much progress or seeing results from that effort. And my broker came to me and she said, hey, we've got 20 houses under management. The guy who's running it is, you know, moving out of town. Do you want to take these over? And I, you know, thought to myself, well, this is a new great opportunity for me to try and earn some money. So why not? So I took over 20 houses. They were being run off of spreadsheets. It was, you know, basically just, you know, herding cats and completely disorganized and so on and so forth. So brought in systems and checklists and culture and a proper software system and tracking and measuring and marketing plans, so on and so forth, and built that up. Had a lot of fun. It was a great ride for several years of renting lots and lots of apartments and, well, condos and single family houses. It was all scattered site, you know, properties like that. And learned that, quite honestly, I had a couple clients that were big. That at the time, I imagined them as being pretty darn big time, and they probably still are to this day, but they inspired me because they made their millions in commercial real estate investment and brokerage. And I, you know, got to know them very well by working for them as their property manager on their, you know, investment properties down in Destin. Then we, you know, I got inspired and started investing in St. Louis, did the little, you know, the small minded mindset plan first and invested in small properties, realized that that's just not quite scalable. And decided it was time to go bigger. So found a great partner, took down a 38 unit, and you know, it's been great momentum since then. And picked up another property thereafter. And now it's time to continue to syndicate deals and find larger properties. So yeah, it's been great ride. I've seen a lot and learned a lot, done a lot. Learned that I am not the best contractor and not the fastest painter. So I'm not the guy to be doing that work anymore. So I hire that out as much as possible. So leveraging other people is one of my biggest things that I try to focus on now, is who, not how.
That is a great point. I actually love that comment. And I want to actually go down that rabbit hole for a little bit, because I think, you know, for many people that may be tuning in with us, you know, they're either new on this journey, they're just starting their business, and it just innately, every new entrepreneur has that I'm a mindset. I'm going to do it. I have to have control. And I mean, even at times, Brian and I, John and I, we're at a point in our business where we're like delegate. But, you know, it took us for a long time to get to the point where like, oh, I don't know if I want to give that up. I don't know if I can delegate that. So talk to us. I mean, how do we break through that mold and get, as an entrepreneur, get to understand that, listen, your time and efforts are best spent in things that are going to grow your business. And you can, it's okay to delegate tasks.
Absolutely. I struggle with that still to this day. I dub myself Mr. Make It Happen, which, you know, honestly is I'm trying to get away from Mr. Make It Happen myself, more like Mr. Motivate Others to do the job for me. So maybe I should change that from Mr. Make It Happen to Mr. Motivation. But yeah, no, I do. I struggle with that. I've had a great opportunity to know what it's like to be in the field and, you know, and make sure everything that the grass is being cut, that the, you know, the paint doesn't have drips on it, and checking every single little teeny tiny aspect of every single unit and being the asset manager. And I think that experience is hugely valuable, but with anything, you have to grow through it and you have to expand your horizons and grow out of one, you know, level and into another. And it's like shedding a skin for a snake. It isn't necessarily the easiest thing to do, but once you get it done, it's like, oh, like, taking off a really tight sweater and being like, oh my gosh, that was holding me back so bad.
And that's a great analogy, because that's exactly what it feels like, right, Brian? I mean, when you have something that consumes so much of your time and effort, and you finally delegate it off to somebody else that can do it, even if it's at 80% of efficiency or however you were doing it, but it allows you to go focus on the other things that are really truly revenue generating for your business. That's a good feeling, man. It's just like you said, it's just like, oh, I can breathe. What do you think, Brian? I mean, we've had a couple of those moments as of late.
Yeah, definitely. You know, one of the things we're implementing more, Lee, which I'm sure you probably looked into or at least heard of, is, you know, just more virtual assistants for tasks that we would call non-revenue generating tasks, right? Things that don't necessarily move, they're important, but they don't necessarily move the business in tremendous ways. You know, this business is about deals and dollars, right? So if we're not chasing deals and talking to brokers and building relationships and with vendors, and then obviously looking for investors as well, some of the little medial tasks, they take up a lot of mental space. They take up a lot of your time, but they don't necessarily generate any dollars. But when you start putting some people in place, man, it feels like, I think you said this the other day, Cody, when we were chatting, you're like, shouldn't I be doing something right now? But it just feels kind of weird that stuff is done. So,
yeah, you get so used to following that routine and it's just like, and then you get rid of it and you're like, I'm missing something. Like something's going missed. But then guess what? The tasks show up on your task list, the things are getting done, the processes are rolling. And you're like, to your point, Lee, it's like you realize that's how you scale, right? When your business starts to run and operate without you having to have your hands in it. And that's when you know things are moving as it should be. You know, you shouldn't be consuming your day and your business with tasks that aren't going to help you grow. So, yeah. And Brian, you made this point, man. It's 2021. I mean, we are in a digital age. If you are not incorporating VAs into your business in some way, you are really just kind of, I'd hate to say old school, but you're missing out on an opportunity where, you know, there's so many great resources for you as an entrepreneur that are very cost efficient that can help you really grow your business. So you got to get your mind open to that. So
100%.
But all right, Lee. Well, cool, man. I love it. Love it. Love it. That was a good little detour there, but I think it's a great point to hit home. And I want to go back to the point of, you know, you mentioned that you found a great partner, and then it was through that partnership you guys landed a 36 unit, if I'm not mistaken. Talk to us about kind of where you found that partner and how do you think that contributed to the ability to close that first deal?
You know, networking is how I found my partner. We actually met on the message boards of Bigger Pockets. And he was investing in smaller properties. I was investing in smaller properties. We met in person in California when I was out there on a ski trip, got coffee, met at a Starbucks. Probably 3 hours later, you know, a 3 hour long coffee meeting is a long meeting. We were, you know, in lockstep, realized we could really scale up if we, you know, combined our two net worths and our two efforts and focus on buying a larger properties as opposed to these, you know, four families and such that we've been thinking about buying, and boom, it was off to the races. So it, in order to even be able to qualify for the acquisition of a larger property, you have to check certain boxes. A lot of people don't realize, like, they're getting started is that, oh, I want to go buy a, you know, a 38 unit apartment building for $1.3 million. Well, guess what? First thing you need to do, just like when you buy a house, is go get pre-qualified for financing. And when you walk into that bank and say, hey, I'm worth even $1 million and you need a $1.3 million loan, they will say, well, go get that other $300,000 in net worth and we'll loan you the money most of the time. Same thing with liquidity. You got to have, you know, the capital in your bank account or liquid available to be able to, you know, sustain the property for a period of time. Usually it's 6 to 12 months by the bank. So you got to get that checkbox. And in order to, I wasn't worth, you know, $1 million at the time. So, you know, but between the two of us, we were able to qualify for financing and liquidity. He lacked any experience in owning or managing similar properties and wasn't local. And I had experience running and managing similar sized properties and portfolios. And, you know, you can check so many more boxes and qualify for a much different type of property when you combine two people's net worths, you know, experience and location into one person. So having that changes everything. You can create a team that can buy a, there's no limit. Literally, you can buy the Empire State Building with the right team.
Oh, sounds familiar, huh, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, I love that. Just the idea of finding pieces, right? It's a puzzle. It's really what we're doing when we're buying these deals is, you know, who has the net worth? Who has the liquidity? Who has a deal? Who has the asset management experience? Who's good at analyzing properties? And everybody has a role they can potentially play. So just because you're missing one of those boxes doesn't mean you can't find somebody out there who checks that box for you. And if, you know, you have that alignment of interest, and if there's somebody from a personality standpoint you're okay having 3 hours of coffee with, there's probably some, you know, forget the X's and O's and the dollars and the cents, right? There's some mutual interest there, at least from a relationship standpoint. There's somebody you can go have a cup of coffee with, grab dinner with, grab a beer with, spend time with on a Sunday. And those are the type of people you essentially want to do business with, you know, just because somebody has a $10 million net worth and a few million dollars in cash, if they're not a good person that aligns with your personality, you probably want to move on to the next person. So I think there's definitely something to be said about that, Cody.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree. But I tell you, you know, finding the right partner is not very easy, you know, and it can be a costly mistake if you don't take your time and really make sure that you're aligning with the right partner that you want to work with. So Lee, before you met this particular partner, did you know what you were looking for? Did you have these certain criteria that you were going out there and specifically seeking in a partner? Or, you know, was it just this natural fit and the stars aligned?
No, there were checkboxes that were going to be, you know, needed. And I would recommend that to anyone who's looking to partner is just because you're friends or just because you're family, which is probably even worse, doesn't mean you should be business partners. It needs to be a mutually beneficial relationship where, you know, either of you have different skills and capabilities that you bring to the table in order to create this perfect, you know, symbiotic relationship. Because generally, you know, the guy who's got the money doesn't necessarily always have the time, you know, or is not necessarily in the location, or any number of those things. And, you know, and generally you're friends with, or you're surrounded by the people that are very similar to yourself. My very first ever partner was someone who was a family member, and we both brought the exact same capabilities to the table. My brother, you know, neither of us really had much money, and neither of us ever, you know, owned anything, you know, in St. Louis. So we bought a property together, and, you know, it just didn't really work out as well as we had hoped. We ended up selling the property for a profit, which was great. But after that, I realized, okay, if I'm going to invest in St. Louis, I kind of need to be there. And if I'm going to, you know, look for a partner, it kind of needs to be someone who offsets my weaknesses, which was capital available. So yeah, I was like, all right, now we go find someone who's got money and time, but doesn't necessarily have to be here because I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a great point. I know that's very similar message to as I share with people when they ask me this question about, oh, where do you find partner? How do you find partnerships? It's like, well, first, you got to figure out who you are, right? You got to figure out what are your skill sets? What is your passion? Like, what is your value add to this partnership? And then whatever else you're missing, that's where you go find it. Then go align with those people. But don't also just jump into the deep end either. You know, don't rip the training wheels off too quick. You want to really go through a few exercises together, make sure that those interests and values are aligned, you know, make sure that you can communicate very well. Because, you know, we say this all the time, right? I mean, a partnership is very easy to get into, but when you start closing these multi-million dollar transactions, it's very hard to get out. And it normally can end up in a very sour situation for both the partnerships. And if you have investors in the deal, it can ultimately impact those investors as well if you don't have a good partnership in between you. So, yeah, I encourage people, take your time, you know, go through some exercises, analyze deals together, tour deals together, just really, you know, go through the motions before actually fully committing to something. So that way you can, you know, really see those values in action, I guess is how I would look at it.
I couldn't agree more. I actually have a suggestion, and it's exactly what I did with my partner. My first good size apartment complex partner is we went and bought a little house together before we went and did some big apartment complex. We bought a $27,000 house, put about $3,000 into it. I, you know, got it fixed up and got it rated for rental. And, you know, we got it rented. I got it rented for $775 and went through the entire process of evaluating the deal, closing it, financing it, remodeling it, leasing it, managing it, so on and so forth. And this was a $30,000 investment as opposed to, you know, several six figures or a multi, you know, or $1 million apartment complex. So I would highly recommend doing a trial somehow, some way, if possible, with a partner, especially if it's a long-term partnership and not just like a, hey, this is a one-off deal. We're going to be, you know, we're going to do this together. It'll be good, you know, that kind of thing. But if you intend to be in lockstep with someone, do something like that first, if possible.
Yeah. 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 In addition to that, you know, we were alluding to this earlier about, right, delegating responsibilities as such. I think the same rings true for partnerships, right? You're only limited to your own time, your own strengths and your own weaknesses, right? And if anybody has been in the multifamily space for any amount of time, you know, it is a crap ton of work. It's so many hats to juggle. There's so many things to do to really scale this business. So it's very few far in between that I ever meet one person that does it all by themselves. And there is a couple, but that's a tremendously, tremendously large responsibility. So I think having partners, like you said, I mean, you went from, you know, duplex, small apartment, big apartment, you know, and you're consistently growing because you have those partnerships. You have people that you can rely on to help you, you know, tackle on those new, bigger projects, right?
Absolutely. And you can go bigger, faster, you know, with a team to be able to help you.
Yeah. Yeah. Brian and I, we like to tell everybody, I mean, you can look at the evolution of timeline of Blue Oak Capital and where it started. And it's like each additional addition of, you know, the partnership between John and then Brian and like just the expansion of our business, the acceleration of the business for every step. And then, you know, coupled that with, like I said, you start delegating tasks and building systems in place that it operates. It's like, man, it's a good feeling when you can start moving with more momentum, for sure, which kind of leads me to my next point I want to talk about is, you know, we were joking about this before the show as well. Law of the first deal, right? Everybody hears about this law of the first deal. You close the first one and the floodgates open. But, you know, I want to talk about that. And you know, you made the duplex, you purchased the smaller multifamily after that through a JV partnership. What happened at that moment? How did this law of the first deal reveal itself to you?
I would say that it was the first time that I've actually had brokers respond back to my phone call voicemails or emails. When, you know, when you are a known owner of a decent sized property and in the commercial brokerage game, that's probably 20 plus units. then, or $1 million plus in value at minimum, then you'll get a call back generally. But prior to that, brokers are very busy. I am one. I don't call people back unless they tell me, like, hi, my name is Mike. I am qualified to buy a property. This is why I'm qualified. Please call me back. I know exactly what I'm looking for. If you have it or can find it for me, I will work with you to buy my property. Or they are, hi, I own this property. Call me back. Unless it's somebody I already know owns a bunch of stuff. Like, I got other people to talk to. I'm a very busy guy, but I am, and most all brokers generally are. So yeah, the law of first deal really is, you know, you're qualifying yourself now to others, and you will get responded to after that. In the meantime, it is difficult to get that first deal done, but, you know, do whatever it takes to get it done would be my suggestion, because you can then start. That is your platform. That, you know, if you're building a rocket ship, you don't just start with the tip of the ship. You know, you start with the platform. And then, you know, you throw the base on, and then the fins, and then the tube, and then the top, and then you fill it with rocket fuel, and then you hit go, and then the thing takes off, and then it, you know, and then sometimes that one crashes, and then you got to go back to the drawing table and you build it again. So, but that platform stays in place.
Sounds like you built a rocket ship before.
I'm on the top of a rocket ship right now, and it's a lot of fun. We'll just, you know, it's going to be amazing to see. I mean, that's what you guys are down there in the Space Coast. So you know, or space area, you know, Houston, and it happens, you know, you try something, it works. Hopefully you are successful at building your platform. And then after that, and your team of scientists and people that know how to build a rocket ship, and then you see if it works, you adjust, it fails, you adjust, it works, you know, it didn't work as well as you thought it would, you adjust. And eventually you're on the moon, you know, or even further out if you want to be.
Yeah, I love that.
Hey guys, it's your host Cody, and I wanted to take a few minutes to share some very exciting news with you. We have closed our first acquisition of 2021 right here in Houston, Texas. We committed over $5.6 million in equity to this deal as a general partnership, and wanted to thank all of our co-sponsors, vendors, and most importantly, all of our investing partners for making this a smooth acquisition. If you missed out on this opportunity and would like to learn more about how you could potentially partner with us on our next multifamily acquisition, then make sure to visit www.blueoakinvest.com/investor-form. If you are also interested in learning more about investing in apartment syndications and the big mistakes to avoid when passively investing, then make sure to check out our blog at www.blueoakinvest.com/blog. Now back to the show.
After closing that first deal, and now you have these brokers calling you back, did you find yourself getting exposure to opportunities that maybe you weren't prior to that?
Of course. Yeah. When you are a known owner, buyer, operator, you have closed one before, you will be brought opportunities, or you'll be given the opportunity to compete for properties that are either on market or off market, much more likely to get that attention than if you are just somebody calling up saying, hey, I want to buy my first place. When you can say, hey, I've already done this before. I just got to do it again. Obviously, I've done it before. So now, you know, you can trust me that I can do it again. It's, you know, the probability of closing is a huge factor in the, you know, the determination of whether or not not only a broker, but a seller takes a buyer seriously. It's, what else does this guy own? How do I know they're going to close? Because I don't want to waste my time with somebody who doesn't have any experience or doesn't have any money or has never owned a place. Where is this place? How much did they pay for it? That kind of thing. But if you can say, yeah, I own one. It's right down the street. This is how much it was. This is what I'm doing to it. This is the bank that I use. If you need, you know, if you need any questions or have any questions, call Tony over at the bank. He'll tell you, you know, we're good. And boom, sure enough, they'll take it seriously. And then you find yourself at the table, you know, to be able to offer on a property. And that's how the second one came around was, hey, like, I own one. I've already done it. This is the bank that I use. This is the team that I have. This is the management company that I use. You know, theirs is just rinse and repeat now. So you should take me seriously. And they will. Once you've closed your first one, that first one is the hardest.
Yeah, we talk about that all the time because it really is, man. There's so much work and effort and time and relationship building that goes into getting that first one done, right? I mean, it takes so much time and effort to get to that point. And it just takes consistency, right? And I'd love to dig into this a little bit and get your perspective from both the investor side and the broker side, like you were just alluding to. But, you know, you can't just be the one-off, right? You can't just be the one of 30 phone calls to get a day and say, yeah, I'm a buyer. And then you don't talk to him again for the next year, right? I mean, you have to keep showing up. You have to show your face. You have to be forward-facing with them and always be top of mind to really even give your shot at the first deal, right? And then you got to obviously prove that you can close the first one. But, you know, I think people don't understand that it's just not as simple as just calling the broker and like, hey, I'm a serious buyer, because especially right now, we all know, I mean, look, we're one of 1,000 syndicators every day that I'm sure brokers are getting phone calls from, you know what I mean? So yeah, getting that first one is so key. But what would you say is the timeline from closing the first deal to getting into the second one?
It was right at a year. So the first one closed and of October of 19, and it was October of 20 that we closed the second deal. So yeah, it took a year of, you know, focus right after the purchase on the first one. Of course, you don't ever want that one to fail. So the first probably 8 months, it was just 100% focus on that first deal. Of course, letting everybody know, I'm always interested in seeing what else is out there. But once that first deal was stabilized and, you know, we knew what we really had here and so on and so forth, it was like, okay, now it's time to go find the next one. And the next one came and it was brought to me off market by a guy, and he knew I was a closer and we were basically direct to seller. It was a friend of a friend who knew the owner, and it was like, okay, yeah, Lee buys apartments. Do you want to buy this one? And I said, yeah. So, and then I met the seller and I was like, hey, I qualified myself directly with the seller. I've already done this. This is the property that I own. This is the bank that I use. My team is already established. We can close. We have a management team. We got all the check boxes you need to close. How much do you want to sell it for? Take me seriously. And he did. And I closed and he got paid. And now I have a, you know, an amazing opportunity to provide value to my investors. And yeah, now it's on to the next one. Already have I, you know, have a deal that we're under contract on right now, a new one, and we're excited about bringing another opportunity to the investors and having another value add deal coming down the pipeline. We're excited about it.
Love it, man. Love it. I'm excited to continue to see you excel, man. That's awesome. But do you feel like it's getting easier and easier with every new acquisition? I mean, if you look back on the first one and going through the grind of the first one, to even the second one, do you feel like the process gets easier and easier as you go?
Oh, of course. Yeah, the process gets easier. You learn what to say no to easier and easier. You know, I would buy my first deal again, but I probably wouldn't pay what I did. And I probably would have done a few things differently. You know, you learn a lot of lessons along the way. And I, you know, now you knew I have new little strategies and tricks and, you know, ways of approach that are so much better and greater. And the only way to get there, you know, the only way to get stronger is go to the gym and lift the weights. You're going to start with, you know, a 5 pound or a 10 pound, whatever. And, you know, next thing you know, you're graduating to a 15 and then you're 20. And then, you know, you wait a little bit of time. And next thing you know, you're lifting 50 pound weights and you're like, wait, I started with a 10, you know, like, yeah, that thing's dinky. Like, what am I going to do with that? Pick it up and throw it across the room? Like, doesn't matter now. And one day I'll look back, and that's how I feel about houses now. Like, I look at a house and I'm like, it's my 10 pound weight. Like, I started with it. I lifted it. Boom, 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 boom. And then, you know, now I'm like, no, nothing less than 50, like 50 units or plus. Like, I unless it's, you know, like something that makes all the sense in the world and it's just a friendship kind of joint venture deal. Yeah. You learn what to do, what not to do, what to buy, what to avoid, you know, like no more flat roof buildings and no more plaster walls, which you guys don't have to worry about that up there or down there. But we got a lot of flat roofs and we got a lot of plaster walls, and I'm not buying any more of that stuff.
We got some flat roofs here, Cody. We see them a few times.
Yeah, we see the TPO roofs here and there, but I don't know anything about plaster walls, but But hey, you know, you bring up a really good point, and this is, I think, a really good key takeaway for today's episode is, you know, when we think about scale and momentum, right? You have the law of the first deal, you've got the first one closed, all these doors start opening up for you. You probably start getting flooded with more opportunity than what you had up to the first deal. And I think you want to continue to build off the momentum, but you still want to be careful because, like you said, you're still learning as you go. And there's a lot of things that you don't know until you become an owner, right? Until you get on that side of the table. And I think it's very easy to get caught up in hearing the other success stories of, oh, you know, I closed 1,000 units in 2 years, or, you know, I closed my first deal and then closed the second one in 90 days or something like that. You know, like it's easy to get in that allure. But we recently had somebody on our podcast a couple of weeks ago, Brian, you remember Mr. Mike Morawski, great guy, has a powerful story of just not scaling too quickly, because when you scale too quickly, you can build an unstable foundation. And what you were just alluding to is exactly what I was thinking about, is because, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting the first deal, taking the bumps and bruises, like making the mistakes, making sure that you iron out, you know, and learn from those mistakes. So that way, when you get to the second deal, you can apply those mistakes and avoid them. Like you said, you can be more selective. You can put better processes in place and really protect yourself more. Ultimately, that's our job as investors, especially when we're bringing investor capital in, is to, how do we hedge our risk? Well, the better educated you are and the more experienced you are, that's a great hedge against this risk, right? So what would be your advice to those who are listening and saying, well, you know, I closed my first one or getting close and they're already thinking about the next one. What advice would you tell them?
I would say that after you close your first deal, make it a point to get to know as many players in the game as possible, not just brokers, but other investors, other owners. Get to know the other people that are buying properties like that you own or want to be buying, and put yourself out there first to get to know them. See if you can learn some lessons as well. You'll start getting a lot more callbacks, a lot more answers. And yeah, take it one step at a time, and then, you know, the doors will open, you know, and you'll see, you know, you'll see where the next steps lie. But, you know, focus on making sure that first one is a success before you just go, or at least stable before you just go and jump into the next one, the next one, the next one, because you'll look back and you go, oh, wait, hold on. What's going on at the first one that I bought? Well, now I have four of them. And what do you mean the bank, you know, is telling me I missed my mortgage payment? Property manager, oh, it's, you know, why are things not getting leased? You know, you have to constantly be managing the managers and the team and so on and so forth. You don't want to take your eye off the ball. You know, that first one is the one that opens all the doors. And the minute that you're recognized as someone who failed, then believe me, those doors will shut pretty quick.
Yeah. We talk about all the time, right? Where it's a very, very small, close community, and it doesn't take very long for word to travel. And, you know, it doesn't take long for somebody to get, you know, put up on the board, so to speak, you know, and people watching, whether that be good or whether that be bad. I mean, you know, there's always people watching, and this industry is such a relationship driven business that, you know, reputation travels for sure in this industry. But, you know, I love the way that you kind of phrase that and you discuss this, because, you know, in looking at your timeline, you closed your first deal. It took you a year to get to close the next one. And to me, it just seems like a nice timeline in between to allow you to get the takeover, learn some of those lessons, figure out, hey, what did we do great? What did we not? What could we have done better? And then boom, you're ready to go for the next one, you know? And because I think the work doesn't stop when you close, right? That's actually where the work is just starting. The real work is after you get the keys, then what do you do? I really just like hearing that timeline. I think it's such a great message. Like you said, just take your time, you know, make sure that you're doing things the right way. And every deal is going to be different. You know, even though we can be very specific in the criteria, every deal is going to bring its own set of challenges, you know, and that's a common theme, Brian. I think you would agree, right? Is the more people that we talk to, especially with experiences, thousands of units, they all say the same thing. Every deal is going to be something new. You're always going to learn something new. So just, again, pace yourself, one foot in front of the other, you know, don't try to tackle the world before you even, you know, take the training wheels off.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, how is this world living between investment sales broker and investor. Now, I know that on the investment sales side, your focus is, if I'm not mistaken, on more of like triple net leases and things like that. So it's not necessarily multifamily, but how is it balancing both worlds?
I actually recently, just in the last several weeks, transitioned my business into multifamily. So I struggled with this for a little while. Last time we saw each other in Knoxville, I was still in the net lease game. And I realized I am extremely powerfully passionate about multifamily. And if I'm going to sell something, it needs to be something that I'm passionate about. So, and if I'm experienced in it, there's no reason why I shouldn't feel like I can't be of more value to my clients as an owner operator of multifamily. So I transitioned into selling multifamily properties, and now I list and sell and represent buyers on multifamily while simultaneously buying, you know, and investing in multifamily myself. So I have both hats, and it is, you know, at first I struggled and I was like, maybe they'll think that I'm competing with them. Then I realized, no, like, just gives me the ability to be more valuable to my clients. Like, hey, yeah, I understand, or I can bring you the value of how to underwrite a deal from an owner or buyer standpoint, because I am one. The difference is that I'm not able to buy 99% of the inventory that's in the market. Like, there's no capability for me to do that. And most deals are not one that I would be willing or able to buy. And of course, if an owner's, you know, ready to sell, then I'm going to list their property for sale and represent them as a seller. And, you know, that's it. But I focus on a certain very small group of property types and sizes, and then I will sell absolutely everything that I possibly can and represent the seller and make sure that they are able to get the top dollar for their property as well. Regardless of who the buyer is, it doesn't make any difference whether I'm part of the buying team or not at all. They should get the best value for their property as they possibly can. So yeah, no, I'm a broker with Marcus and Millichap. I sell multifamily, and every once in a while I buy one too.
Love it, man. Love it. When we talk to other industry professionals, it's always enlightening. It's always really cool when you have professionals that live both worlds, both as an owner operator and that professional. Because as you mentioned, right, you know both sides, you know both worlds, and you can see the owner and operator's perspective, and you know what that value they're looking for as a buyer, as an owner operator. So really, really cool. But I want you to put your broker hat on right now, and I want you to kind of break the stigma through the industry for us, because I think brokers probably unfairly get a bad rap as far as, you know, you guys as brokers are the gatekeepers. You're the coordinator between me, the buyer, and, you know, the seller, and you're representing the seller. You're right. But you're also representing me in a way as well, right? You got to go sell me to the seller. Mm-hmm. But I think right now, especially with the level of aggression that we're seeing in the marketplace right now, you know, pricing is just absolutely absurd right now. I mean, you're one of 30 offers on the table a lot of times. And it just seems like a lot of these valuations are just, like you mentioned earlier, on the moon, like just way far out there. And I think a lot of times, unfortunately, the brokers may get a bad rap for that, right? You know, break down the stigma. Like, how do we get the investing community to understand that, listen, you guys are just a part of our team as you are the seller's team. You know, you're here to help us make a transaction as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you talk to buyers and when you talk to sellers, there is always the value of having a broker involved in your transaction to several points. First of all, with a seller, the absolute best way to get the highest possible proceeds from your sale is to create a market around your property, bring as many qualified buyers as humanly possible to the table to acquire that property, and not just at the best price, but the highest probable close and at the best possible terms for the seller, whether that be time frame or whether that be, you know, the structure of the closing, certain terms make or break a deal. And, you know, it's the broker's job to bring together two parties that are able to close on a deal. And from a buyer standpoint, working with a broker, you know, helps you be more qualified for a deal. If you come to a table and you say, you know, hey, I'm ready to write an offer on this property, and the broker comes back to you and says, terrific, you know, I need to know that you're pre-qualified for your financing. That's not them, putting you down. That's them making sure that you present your best, you know, put your best foot forward and have the most likely ability to be getting to the place where you're getting to the closing table. It's, hey, do you have all your ducks in a row before we submit this offer to the seller? No? Okay, well, I understand that. Here are the steps you need to take in order to be ready to put in the offer. It's not, hey, you can't buy the deal. It's, hey, great. Let's make that happen. I want you to buy this place. But in order for you to be considered a likely buyer, you need to be pre-qualified for financing. We need to make sure that you're good to go. Do you have a bio? Do you own some other stuff? And let's put this thing together, put it to bed. There's a lot of work that happens on the back end besides just marketing and putting two live wires together. There's a process involved in this. There's, you know, issues with title constantly, issues with inspections constantly. How much should that cost? Who has the burden of that cost, depending on what it is? You know, what inspections should be scheduled? When? By who? How much do they cost? What banks are there available? What types of financing are there available? What are the terms of those financing that are currently available? Are you getting the best rate from a buyer standpoint? And a broker can help guide you through all of that process. They're a consultant and an advisor. They can help you with every single step that you need to take to be able to buy that property if they take you seriously. They'll say, okay, great. Terrific. You know, you are pre-qualified for financing. Awesome. Who's going to be doing your roof inspection? Well, I don't know. Like, I don't have a roofer. Okay, cool. Here's three roofers. Call them. Oh, well, who's going to do the inspection of the sewer for you? I don't know. Okay, here's three sewer inspection contractors. Go, you know, contact them and hire which one is the best one. Who's doing your financing? Oh, Bank of the South, whatever. Well, have you ever considered doing, you know, business with Bank of the North? I don't know. I never have. Okay, great. Here's Tony's phone number at Bank of the North too, so you can get multiple debt options. So a broker is a person who brings value to the table, and it's much easier to get a deal closed with fewer speed bumps and more likely with a broker than without a broker. You know, a seller and a buyer meet in a bar and they sit and the seller says, hey, I own a property. And the buyer says, I like to buy a property. Next thing you know, they're under contract and the seller finds out the buyer has no idea what he's doing. He has no financing. He has no money. And it's just been a complete waste of everybody's time. Does anybody really want to get themselves involved with that? Probably not. But if a seller walks into, you know, a room being brought in there by a broker, and there's already 20 people in that room who are already pre-qualified for financing, put their hands up, ready to buy. I've already got the capital. Let's do this thing. Guess what? That seller feels like the belle of the ball. And you know what? They are. You know, at the end of the day, they're the ones that own the property and they're the ones that are ready to sell. And from a buyer standpoint, you got to get into that room. You got to be one of the 20 people. You got to be prepared. Have your financing ready. So, and that's what the broker is. They're party planner.
I like that. First time I heard it phrased that way, party planner. But
hey, but, guess when the party ends or when the whole, you know, the fruition is the closing table, when everybody's happy and everybody's dancing and everybody's celebrating. Why? It's everybody gets paid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the buyer gets a property.
Yeah.
You know, everybody should leave or be at the closing table, leaving the closing table with smiles on their faces. That's my goal.
Yeah, I love that. We all have a very close mutual friend within our community, right, Mr. Bill Hamm. And I love the way Bill said it. He's like, look, you want to build relationships with brokers? Go close a deal with them. And he's like, forget all the coffee, forget all the, you know, golf or whatever. He's like, that don't mean nothing. He's like, you know, go close a deal. When transacting, that's a relationship. When money's involved, yep, that's a relationship. So, I'm sure that's a very good day, but I like the way that you refer to you know, the broker as a consultant and advisor. And I would agree with that. And I think, you know, when you come in with a mindset of the broker's your enemy, you're not going to get very far. But you really have to build, like you said, build those relationships, show your credibility, show your worth, prove that you are a true solid buyer. And like you said, get yourself in that table and, you know, really lean in on the relationships with the brokers. Because I think when you have a great relationship with a broker, they're going to go represent you. If you have all your ducks in a row, they're going to represent you to get you at that table, you know, to give you that opportunity. And then after you close, I'd imagine that that relationship hopefully only strengthens, because hopefully this turns into another transaction 5-7 years down the road. Right. So, and from now a seller side. So,
yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like back to the party planner analogy, imagine you guys are both married, you know, imagine planning your wedding with no wedding planner.
No.
Would you do it?
No.
Yep. Rep, where would you get married? Where would you throw the party? Who's going to make the cake? What band's going to play? What kind of music are they going to play? It's the same thing. Brokerage is a value to both the buyer and the seller, you know, just, you know, whether it is or not. So that's what I recommend is, you know, work with a broker, even if you don't, even if you find the seller, you probably want to hire a lawyer and a broker to help you get the deal across the table and pay them a fee to help them make sure they make sure you get the deal closed under the best possible terms for both parties.
Yeah. We're going to leave a little cliffhanger right here at this point in the show, because this is a whole nother podcast episode. It's going to be a great conversation. So we're going to leave the guests hanging there for a little bit so we could tackle this again. But we're kind of unfortunately getting near the end of our time here, Lee, but man, really enjoyed the conversation. Brian, any questions we didn't ask Lee before we get into the final four here?
No, Lee, we really appreciate your insight, both from an investor and then obviously from a broker as well. I think there's a lot of emotions involved in any type of transaction, right? So the broker is there not only to do all the fine details, like you mentioned, but also to manage expectations, right? From both the seller side, like, no, your property isn't worth 10 million, it's worth 5. Let's be realistic, right? And then for the buyer, same thing, right? Like, no, you can't buy this for 1, it's worth 5. So there's a lot of that involved along the way, even after you're under contract. So, and then we appreciate you hearing your story on the investment side. I think it's awesome to hear, you know, people's success stories and their journeys. And we're happy to have you in our network and looking forward to continuing to watch you grow.
Love it. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Well, don't go anywhere just yet, Lee. We got 4 final questions for you, and then we're going to wrap up, man. So rapid fire here. Love to hear everybody's kind of background and what are you doing for your continued education to further your own investing?
Right now, I'm attending Unleash the Power Within, the virtual conference with Tony Robbins. Literally, as we speak, I took a break from it today to be able to attend this with you guys. And I'm constantly educating, whether it be personal development events virtually now because of COVID, hopefully back in person eventually one day, but also reading, listening to podcasts. I constantly am reading a new book and educating constantly all the time.
Love it. Well, I'm kind of honored that you're skipping your day with Tony Robbins to hang out with Brian. And I feel like we're celebrity status now, Brian.
I wasn't going to reschedule on you again.
Well, we appreciate that, buddy. We appreciate it. So, well, what have been some of the lasting lessons you've learned along your journey?
Always ask for something you want or need. Always, because you just might get it. You know, if you need a retrade because of one thing or another, or you need a certain, you know, period of time to close from a seller standpoint, always ask for what you need, because if you don't ask for it, you're never going to get it. And if you do ask for it, you might just be surprised and you'll get that and more.
Oh, that's a good one. Now I'm disappointed we don't have more time, because I'd love to go down that rabbit hole. But any advice you'd give to the listeners as they're going on their investing journey?
Never limit yourself, ever. You can do anything with the right people around you. Surround yourself with amazing people. I joined a couple of amazing groups, you know, including where we're all members of the Wheelbarrow Profits, Jake and Gino group. And join a group, get a community around you. You will grow just by surrounding yourself with awesome people.
I love it. Great advice, man. Really appreciate that. All right, Lee, tell the listeners how they can learn more about you and get connected with you.
You can find me on Facebook, Lee Fjord. Just search for me. There aren't very many FJORDs out there. So Facebook, you can, you know, heck, call me. It hasn't burned me yet. My phone number is 850-797-1307. I'm sure you guys will put it in the show notes. My email address is lee.fjord@marcusmilichap.com. I'd love to help anyone, whether they are a new investor or someone who owns several thousand doors. I'm here to help anybody all the time.
Awesome. Lee, appreciate you tuning in. Great conversation. Just love what you're doing, man. Thank you so much for all the value that you add in the community, and go keep crushing it, man.
Thanks, Cody. Thanks, Brian.
Yeah.
You guys are awesome.
Today's episode was proudly brought to you by Blue Oak Capital. To learn more about Blue Oak Capital and how you can partner with us, visit www.blueoakinvests.com. Tune in next time.